Welcome to the Texas Crime Cast by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Jen Emily. Today we'll talk about Farmers Branch Police Officer Ken Johnson, who was charged with murder and aggravated assault after shooting and killing one teen and injuring another while off-duty in Addison. We'll also chat about a University of North Texas student who has been missing for nearly two decades. My co-hosts today are Claire Baller and Kevin Krause.
Hi.
Hello, Jen.
Editorial writer Mike Hashimoto will end our show in the usual way with his latest Hashing It Out segment about the shooting in Addison. So, Claire, talk to me about the shooting of the off-duty by the off-duty officer. The circumstances are very different from what we usually see. For one, the officer was not on duty. He was in his personal car. What happened? Or what do we know about what happened? There's a lot we don't know.
Right. So there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot that we don't know. But what we do know is that Ken Johnson, this off-duty officer, encountered two teens apparently in his apartment complex. And in his words, he described them burglarizing a vehicle. And it then proceeded into a chase. He jumped into his own personal vehicle and chased them about half a mile down the road into Addison, where surveillance video shows his vehicle slamming into the back of the suspect's vehicle, causing it to spin out. The video doesn't show much more from there, but what we know is at that point is when the shooting occurred. Johnson fatally shot Jose Cruz and also shot Edgar Rodriguez in the head. He did survive his injuries.
And these are kids. We're not talking about adults. We're talking about kids, right?
Right. We're talking ages 16 to 19.
And the police haven't said yet whether they were armed, have they?
We do not know if they were armed or not. And we also don't know if Johnson identified himself as an officer. He was in plain clothes in his own personal vehicle. The surviving suspect, Edgar Rodriguez, said that he never identified himself as an officer, Johnson saying he did. So that's a factor that is going to determine a lot, and that's still unknown in this case.
Do we know if he called for backup at any point? Or
we don't know that either. Okay. It doesn't appear that he did.
Now, what are the rules in Farmers Branch, or Addison for that matter, about police chases? And obviously he wasn't in a patrol car or even an unmarked police car. He was in his own vehicle. Is there a policy that addresses this?
So first of all, I mean, each department has their own policies for off-duty officers and what they allow and don't allow and expect and don't expect. And same goes for these in-car chases. But usually police departments have guidelines for these pursuits, and many emphasize the need to protect civilians. And it's clear, which, you know, the Farmers Branch police chief said this as well, that Johnson was not following protocol in this case for the safety of those he was pursuing and the safety of those around them.
I know from talking to people at the courthouse, lawyers who are following what happened, it's really unusual for a police officer to be charged with murder in a shooting. It's even more unusual that it happened so quickly. I mean, this happened on the 13th of March, and he was charged with murder and aggravated assault 3 days later. It really seems to be, the attorneys around the courthouse say that there must be a lot of evidence. There must be something that's driving this that is evidence-based, because they're usually reluctant to move very fast, and they want to take their time, finish the investigation. Do we know anything about what evidence they might have?
We don't yet, but everyone's eager to hear what came to light that led them to act so quickly. One thing that's probably likely as well is that they're really trying to do their best to move quickly with this investigation and get answers. This is not the first time that a shooting like this has happened, a fatal shooting on behalf of an officer. And I think that in this case, Farmers Branch Police Department is really trying to work fast to make decisions, and it seems as though they have enough evidence to make a clear, concise decision to charge Johnson with murder.
Well, it sounds like that surveillance video is going to be key. I mean, if it shows him ramming the car, it probably also shows, you know, what led to the shooting. They haven't released that video, have they?
They have the video. Oh. You can watch, and it really actually doesn't show very much, which is why it's difficult. It looks like it's coming from a gas station surveillance camera, and you see both cars come into the frame, And it's unclear why Johnson's car hits the back of the Dodge Charger that Cruz and Rodriguez were in. And perhaps they slowed down and he didn't, or maybe it was a maneuver to try to get them to stop. It's not clear, but what is clear is that this area that they were in was had heavy traffic. They were not the only cars on the road. So regardless of the intent or why it happened, it was a dangerous maneuver. And it's lucky that no one else was involved in that crash.
Does it also show the shooting?
It doesn't. Oh. No. So the video really provides more questions than answers.
The police and the district attorney's office have obtained many warrants in this case, and they are all sealed. There's a little bit that's available that's not sealed. I know that they have, they did the obvious. They got warrants to search both cars, and they took data from the cars and forensic samples. They would met, you know, probably blood and that kind of forensic evidence from the two teenagers. And they've also obtained a warrant for more video from a nearby business. They got that yesterday, and it's unclear yet if that video shows anything. And I don't know if they've even gotten the video to look at it yet, but they are looking. They are hoping to see that video to see if maybe that captured the shooting.
Yeah, you would think that if they moved so fast on this and actually said there was probable cause to charge him with murder, very serious, crime, that there would have to be video. Maybe one of these kids had their cell phone video going.
And that's another thing that makes it difficult too, is this officer, he was off duty. He was not in a police vehicle that had a dash cam. He didn't have his radios or anything like that. So little was documented throughout the ordeal.
Yeah, and I guess that's why it's not a good idea to have off-duty police officers chasing people in their own personal cars, because the dash cam the dash cameras are there for transparency.
And also, if you're being chased by a car, how are you supposed to know it's a police officer?
Right.
It's, unmarked cars, they have, lights that they can put up if they need some. So, if somebody starts chasing me, I think I'm going to be frightened. I'm going to be scared that somebody's trying to run me off the road or chase me down or whatever. I wouldn't think that it was a police officer.
And there's also debate as to what these two teens were doing. The family says they were in the area visiting friends for spring break. Johnson says he saw them breaking into a car. So it's not known what they were doing or why Johnson ended up chasing them down. But it seems clear that there was definitely probably some misconception in his identity.
And there might be some video out there from the place where this all began, too, that would show, what the officer was doing, what the kids were doing, that could clear some of this up, too. It just seems like it's impossible these days to go anywhere and not be on video. So what is the officer has an attorney, Chris Livingston. My understanding is that he is saying that, if his client, the police officer, were white, that the police department wouldn't be so quick to jump on charges. But I haven't spoken to him, so I didn't know if you had, Claire.
Yeah, no, not yet. And up until now, people have been staying pretty tight-lipped, just since this case is so complex and so confusing. But now that these charges have been made against Johnson, now things are starting to happen as we speak. So we're really waiting to see what's going to go down today and going forward.
And the family has kind of wavered about whether they're going to file a lawsuit. At first, maybe saying that they weren't, but now it looks like they are considering it again. And obviously it isn't a decision that has to be made anytime soon.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going back and forth on that. I think right now it's clear that they're just focusing on grieving. The funeral for Jose Cruz is today. Mm-hmm. So I think that's their number one priority. But they are working with an activist who's become their spokesperson, who has handled several cases like this. I believe that he's saying they might be...
They're considering it at the very
least. Yes, they're considering it, for sure.
And so when we look at other shootings that have happened, It seems like, you know, there was a shooting in Grapevine not all that long ago where it was really difficult to find out information about what was happening. But here, it seems like both Addison and Farmers Branch are at least talking somewhat about what's going on. I mean, the Farmers Branch police chief came out and said, you know, we didn't, you know, this cop didn't follow policy. He was off duty. This is what the policy is. And when at times police departments are very close-lipped, and not that Addison and Farmers Branch are telling everything they know, far, far from it, but they're trying to be at least somewhat transparent. And I think the family spokesman, who you said has dealt with a lot of this, is saying that he notices a difference.
Yes, he also was involved in the Grapevine shooting that was similar to this case, and he was saying that it seems like police are being much more proactive and are speaking out much more than before. And this might be because there were hard lessons learned with what happened in Grapevine. And I think that because the fact that Ken Johnson was off duty really changes the game here. And I think it seems like they're eager to distance themselves from him, considering the fact that there's so much gray.
Claire, you just wrote about the disappearance of Kelly Cox. How long has she been missing, and what do people think happened to her? What do you think happened to her?
She went missing the summer of 1997. At this point, she was 20 years old, a UNT student, also a young mother. She had a 19-month-old at the time. That morning, she had left her home in Farmers Branch and gone up to Denton, where she normally would go to attend class, but on this day, she was meeting her criminal justice class at the Denton police station to tour the jail. She was told to secure all of her personal belongings in her vehicle, as they could not be brought into the jail, which she did. And she secured a key to her vehicle in a magnetic box under her car. When she came out of the jail tour, her key didn't work. So she went back into the Denton police office and asked if she could borrow a phone. At this time, that call would have been a toll call to call from Denton back to Farmers Branch. So they told her that she would have to walk down the street about a block to a Conoco gas station where a payphone was located. So she followed that instruction, walked down the street, made a call at the payphone to her then boyfriend, and asked if he could come and bring another key to her car. That call was confirmed by authorities. Kelly then, from what we know from some witnesses who were around at the time, walked from the payphone and was last seen at a car wash that's located right next to the gas station. This is an area that was very heavily trafficked at the time. When I went back, on a Tuesday, midday, just like Kelly was when she was there, and there were plenty of cars going by. It's the intersection of McKinney and Railroad, right in Denton, and heavily trafficked. And it just doesn't make sense how she could have disappeared with no one seeing.
Are a lot of the businesses the same, or is that gas station still there? Is the car wash still there?
So gas station, that building is still there. It's now been converted into a taqueria. The neighboring business is a building company, has been there around 30 so years, and was definitely there at the time of Kelly's disappearance. Police station was there. So this area looks virtually the same. There have been a few minor changes, but relatively the same. I talked with some people who were there around the time when she disappeared, and they said what you're seeing today, how busy it is, was the same as it was then, if not more so. So everyone's really stumped as to how this girl, who was street smart, aware of her surroundings, seemed to be doing all the right things, how she could have disappeared.
Did the police or her mother or anybody else talk about the fact that since nobody saw anything, you know, like a kidnapping or anything like that, did they think she gotten somebody the car of somebody she knew, or, you know, just kept walking and was disappeared away from there, or did they talk about that at all?
So officers who worked on her case said that, and her family said this as well, it's obvious that Kelly did not leave on her own free will. She was a proud mother to her daughter, Alexis. She was a straight-A student. was on track and had a very promising future, and she just would not have left her daughter behind. So it is possible, they say, that she could have gotten into a vehicle with someone she knew and trusted, or that somehow someone abducted her without anyone seeing what happened, without blinking an eye. And for almost 20 years, her family has been left without answers.
And I take it her credit cards were never used after she disappeared.
No, because again, everything she had, all of her identity, all of her wallet, her phone, they were all locked within her vehicle. So as her mom says, she was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So there's been some recent activity linked to her case with the authorities digging in Houston.
Right.
So what's going on with that? Do the police have a suspect in mind who may have led them to that area? Or did they get a tip? How come? Why are they digging?
So the reason why this case has really come back on the map is because of a suspect who authorities believe could be the guy. His name is William Reese. He was an Oklahoma truck driver around this time. He had already been convicted and given a 60-year sentence for the kidnapping of a 19-year-old girl. And she lived to tell her story. She came out from a gas station to find her tire slashed, and William Reese was right there and offered to help and proceeded to kidnap her. She jumped from his car and survived. But that's just one of many cases that Reese has been linked to. And the alarming thing is that all of these cases that he is now a suspect in all involve young girls from ages 16 to mid-20s. And these young girls all in some way or another experience some sort of car trouble. So it's all fingers are kind of pointing in William Reese's direction. And recently he told authorities that he was involved in Kelly Cox's case and also the case of a girl named Jessica Kane, who went missing in Galveston just weeks apart from Kelly's disappearance. And he indicated that their bodies might be found in this field in Houston.
And do we know if anything has been found? Are they still looking today?
Nothing has yet been found. The search was delayed due to weather, but authorities are still digging, and they have now, as of 2 days ago, moved to a new location, just neighboring the one they were searching in before, and they've now brought in a new canine unit from California. So it's obvious that they have probable cause to be digging in this area and are taking this man's word very seriously.
And so the dogs are trained to detect the scent of dead or decaying bodies?
This canine is that was brought in from California is specifically trained to find bones.
Okay.
So this guy could be a serial killer. Could turn out that this guy was a really bad guy. Do we know how many victims he is claiming to have had?
For this dig site, he's talking about at least two girls. Who knows what authorities could find? This guy seems to be very dangerous and seems to have a long history of kidnapping, raping, and murdering young women. And it seems that now, since he's been convicted of one case already, he's starting to talk, perhaps because he has nothing to lose.
And what about her family? I mean, and I would imagine it's very difficult for them to live without answers. I mean, it's one thing to know you've lost someone to a violent crime, but it's something altogether to wonder what happened.
Yes. So Kelly's mother, Jan Bynum, and her stepfather, Niles Bynum, still live in the home that they lived in with Kelly and Kelly's young daughter, Alexis, before Kelly disappeared. And the home is still, you know, pictures of Kelly still sit on the piano and hang on the wall. And they're all kind of frozen in time, you know, the last pictures that they had of Kelly. So it's very clear that this is a daily part of their lives. And they were left when Kelly disappeared with her 19-month-old daughter, Alexis, who is now 20 years old herself. She's a UNT student. And by all accounts, she's a spitting image of Kelly before she disappeared. I think the biggest driving force for the Bynums has been to raise this daughter in a way that Kelly would be proud. When I sat down with them, Jan said that because they don't have answers, part of her still thinks that maybe she could come knocking on the door or walk right in. And her hope is that if that were to ever happen, Kelly would look at Alexis and say, oh, gosh, Mom, you've done a great job.
Sometimes people do just disappear. I mean, typically it's like more middle-aged people who have a midlife crisis or something and just fake their death or, you know, and they end up like in some island, some tropical island somewhere.
Are you telling us you have some plans, Kevin?
I might.
I'm not
might,
saying
yes.
that you're. I'm not saying how old you are or anything like that. But you know, you kind of know seem to know something about this.
Yeah, I've considered it for about 1 second and said no, that would be a very bad idea.
I don't think your wife would be very happy. Maybe if you took her with you.
Yeah, there you go.
And
there
the cats.
One thing that's been pretty difficult for this family is, you know, they are still left without answers. And every time a new missing persons case comes up, it just is rubbing salt in the wound that has been open for so long for them. You know, there's the case of the Christina Morris who went missing at the shops at Legacy, and her case is still unsolved. And it's a painful thing for the Bynums every time something like this comes up. And you know, there'll be families who will find remains or finally get some closure and get some answers. And we can hear from Jan, who kind of talked a bit about what it's like, what dealing with not having closure.
I don't want them to find remains. I want her to come home. If she's gone, and then I want to know. I've never really liked the word closure, but it brings those answers, and it brings at least the comfort that she's not out there somewhere hurting.
So that was Jan describing to me what it's like living with this brutal reality of not knowing what happened to your only daughter, your only child. And she talks about how closure is not a word that she likes or that, you know, closure is, she's not really wanting to find that in remains, but that would be something, at least it would be answers. And in this interview, you know, nothing really prepares you to sit in front of someone who's been grieving not only from such a loss, but for so long. I mean, almost 20 years. You know, in that time, Kelly's daughter has grown up and become a young woman herself. And it really became very obvious that the Bynum family lives with this, not just every day, but every moment of every day. And this became very clear when they said goodbye to a stranger, when they said goodbye to me after our interview wrapped up. I think at least three or four times they both told me to be safe, to please be safe. And they watched me walk to my car as I left and wouldn't leave the doorway until I was secure in my car with the door closed. And it just was very clear that this is something that has deeply, deeply scarred them and affects everything in their lives.
Yeah, it must have been tough to interview them. I mean, did you find yourself having different emotions as you were talking to them and hearing about this story?
It was difficult because, like you were saying, people go missing or people are kidnapped or, you know, their bodies are found. And sometimes there are stories that make that death make a little more sense. This person was hanging out with the wrong crowd. You know, plenty of reasons why sometimes these cases can make sense, but nothing makes sense in Kelly's case. She was smart. She was doing the right things. And it was difficult because you realize that what happened to Kelly could happen to anyone. If she really did just vanish, if William Reese was there and she was in the wrong place at the wrong time, that could be anyone.
And what's really tragic about this is the accident of locking all her, you know, her things in her car, because nowadays you would have a cell phone. Maybe they could track you through your cell phone or you could make a call or something. So it just seems like events conspired against her in a really horrible way that left her kind of shut out from the outside world, unable to communicate with anyone. And it's a lesson too for us, you know, to be aware of our surroundings and always be prepared. And you know, but yeah, it's, you did a great job on the story.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So now we're just keeping a close eye on what's happening in Houston, and hopefully maybe some answers might come from their search there.
You get up every single day, and it's today the day she's going to call? Is today the day she's going to ring the doorbell? Or is today the day we're going to get answers from the police? So That doesn't ever go away. I know people talk about time makes it easier. The adrenaline doesn't, I don't get that adrenaline rush every time the phone rings or anything like that, like I did in the very beginning. But it doesn't, not knowing, you don't, I mean, I'm like, is she out there somewhere and needs my help? I'm her mom. I'm supposed to be helping her.
That's all for us today. Thanks for listening. You'll hear the latest Hashing It Out in just a moment. Stay tuned to DallasNews.com for more coverage of criminal justice issues. Remember to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We are at Texas Crime Cast. Thanks to our sound engineer, Tommy Noel. For Claire Baller and Kevin Krause, I'm Jen Emily. We hope you stay safe out there. Now we drop the mic.
Ken Johnson deserves his day in court. It might not go very well. He's the Farmers Branch police officer now facing murder and aggravated assault charges. He's accused of shooting two teens he said were breaking into a car outside his apartment. Jose Cruz is dead. Edgar Rodriguez is expected to survive a gunshot to the head. Johnson was arrested Wednesday night, and make no mistake about how unusual that is. Officers involved in shootings, even off duty as Johnson was, typically go straight to a grand jury, not jail. That relieves police of the decision to charge a fellow officer. The evidence puts Johnson in a tough spot. His attorney told Channel 8 that the teens had no weapon, which Johnson initially claimed. Chris Livingston called this a complicating factor, a dramatic understatement. It does not convict Johnson, but if you wonder why police charged him, this could be it. Not to mention Johnson's violation of several department policies, including ending a car chase by ramming the teens from behind. We trust police to carry deadly weapons in part to protect us. We expect them to follow the rules. When they don't and someone dies, they must pay the same price as anyone else. That's neither pro-police nor anti-police. That's following the law.